Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen, remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did ya? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host Eddie Trunk.
Hey, welcome everybody. Eddie Trunk here with you for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New every Thursday, anywhere you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you all had a great week. Hope you enjoyed the interview last week with DJ Viola, who of course is the director of the Kiss documentary. If you missed that, go back and check it out. Also, we had Alex Lifeson of Rush not too long ago. A lot of great interviews, bringing you great stuff each and every week on Thursdays here on the podcast. As I mentioned, the interviews you hear on this podcast originated on my Sirius XM radio show, Trunk Nation, heard Monday through Friday live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Volume Channel 106, or of course on the Sirius XM app. Be sure to join me on Sirius XM if you're in the U.S. or Canada and listen each and every day and interact and get involved with these interviews and call in. If you're only listening to the podcast, you're getting a tiny fraction of the interviews and what I do on a daily basis live on the radio. Thank you for hanging with me this week. We've got two interviews for you. We're going to go into the glory days of MTV back in the 80s when hard rock bands dominated radio, dominated MTV. And we are going to bring you two interviews from that era. Two artists I recently had a chance to see play live at the M3 Rock Festival and spend some time with. We will go ladies first, as is only proper, and start with Lita Ford. Lita will be our first of two interviews this week. Lita called in to talk about one of her guitars going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and a performance she will do there in Cleveland to celebrate that event. Now, of course, we hope Lita herself gets into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at some point, but this maybe is a baby step in that direction. Lita is an old friend. Lita was the first ever guest in the history of That Metal Show, and it's always great to visit with her and talk with her, and her band is so good. It's always great to go out and see her play live. In the last few weeks alone, I've hosted several shows with her, and it's always fun. So Lita Ford kicks us off. And then interview number two on this week's podcast, lead singer of the band Kix, Steve Whiteman. Steve's band headlines night one of M3 every year, given that they are from Maryland. Steve is really remarkable. He's been doing this for better than 40 years. He keeps himself in top shape vocally and physically. Kix still such a great live band, so many great songs. And Steve did something for the first time in his very long career, and that is release his first ever solo record called You're Welcome, which is out now. Steve was on with me a few weeks ago here or on the radio show, and now I bring you that interview as my podcast. We talk about Kix. We talk about their guitarist, Ronnie Youngkins, who is currently in rehab, and his situation. We also talk about why now it was the right time for Steve to make a solo record, and also his regimen. How does he stay in such top form after all these decades? Steve, also a great guy, an old friend, and it was great to have him on as well. So Lita Ford first, Steve Whiteman second, on this week's podcast. Again, be sure to check out the radio show during the week on SiriusXM 106 volume and listen to the podcast, of course, and you'll get that every Thursday. And of course, anything you miss, if you're a SiriusXM subscriber, you can always get on the app. There's video for many of these interviews as well that you can only access through the SiriusXM app and listen each and every day as I talk rock with you there. Also, be sure to follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter and Instagram, where I am most active. And as far as appearances are concerned, next up, this coming Saturday, I will be in Fort Wayne, Indiana, to host a show at the Sweetwater Pavilion with Warrant and special guest Lita Ford. Eric Martin. We've got Lita Ford and Kix interviews coming up. This Saturday, I'm in Fort Wayne with Warrant and Eric Martin of Mr. Big. There you go. That's the right information I'm giving you. Keep an eye on the social media for any info and changes. You know, the times we're in now, stuff can change on the drop of a dime. So always keep up with what's going on. Keep an eye there. But that's the plan for this coming Saturday, to be in Fort Wayne. Hope to see you there if you're in that part of the country. All right, we got two interviews, so let's get right to them. Coming up in just a bit, Steve Whiteman of Kix. We start with Lita Ford. Lita called into my SiriusXM radio show to talk about the induction of her guitar into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Here's Lita to explain. Lita, welcome. How are you today?
Hi, Eddie. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Anytime.
Anytime I want, anything I want. Is that a pie? I mean, really? Can I have some chocolate?
You always have an open door here. And yes, chocolate is the least we can do for you. You had some fantastic shows. I got to tell you, you and the band firing on all cylinders the last few weeks. I saw you a couple times, whether it was M3 or Houston or Tulsa. Must feel great to be out there playing again, and you can feel it from the audience, and you can see it in you and the band.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much. And it's great to see you at the shows, too. We love seeing you. But yes, I mean, the band is firing on all cylinders, and it's just freaking badassery. I mean, it's just, you know, I couldn't ask for more. Everybody's in such a great frame of mind, and everybody came out of the COVID with this will to rock again and bring live music back to the fans and the audiences. And it shows.
It does show. Lita, in the short time that you've been back playing live shows, and you're out there every weekend and you're out there in a lot of different places, what's the vibe been like for you? I mean, what have you seen out there with the audience? And have there been any early highlights of just being out and playing again?
You know, it's just a lot of people showing up at the shows, a lot more than I had thought. And nobody's wearing face masks. And everybody's so into the music and so into what's happening on stage. It's just really, really great. I'm so happy to see the fans. And I know they're happy to see us. And it just is like this whole vibe is going back and forth on stage with the fans and the band, and everybody's so happy to see each other. And it's like, yeah, man, we're doing this. Yeah, man, we're live. We're rocking it. And you guys are what it's all about. And that's just it. So, I mean, it doesn't get any more badass than that.
No, you know, and you've been making music and out there touring professionally, of course, since the 70s with the Runaways. What was the year and change layoff like for you? Was it a good recharge? I imagine that was kind of like really one of the first times in your life. I mean, I know you were, you know, when you were married, you were disconnected and on the island for all those years. But outside of that, while you were professionally working and as a touring musician, which has been most of your life, it had to be surreal to have the last year or so and have that taken away, I would think.
Yeah, it was. It was weird, and I saw it coming. I actually saw it coming, and I had said to George, our manager, I said to him, God, I hope this isn't the end of the rock and roll world. Like, this isn't the end of rock and roll, because I wasn't sure. And we were on this tour. We were on this cruise ship, and five bands canceled on the cruise ship. One of them was Bret Michaels. And Bret never cancels anything. I mean, Bret plods through anything and everything. And he canceled. And I was just like, oh, my God, what's happening in the world today, you know? And so at the end of the cruise, they came back to us, and Alice Cooper's team said to us, Alice is canceling, and he's going to reschedule the shows. And we were just like, okay, so we're getting off this cruise ship, we're going home, and we're going to sit there and just wait it out and see what the hell happens with our lives. And see what the hell happens with rock and roll. And is rock and roll coming back? We don't even know. So it was just, you know, so scary. I needed a year off, honestly. I was tired and didn't know it. And I had a few things, like I needed to just eat good, learn how to sleep, and take a whole bunch of vitamins. And then I was just like, okay, well, now what? Now what do we do? And I said, oh, well, Lita, just wait a little while longer because nobody really knows. No one really knows what's coming in the music industry. Everything's shut down. The states are shut down. Each individual state is shut down, and they have their own laws and their own rules. And, you know, we're just so grateful to be back, and everybody's recharged. Everybody's
well, you
healthy.
Can see it. You can, having just seen you three times in the last few weeks, you can see it, you can feel it, you can hear it. You sound and look great. You're playing great. The band is so good. I am so appreciative of bands like you that play 100% live, and the vocals are so good. The playing and it's just great. It's just so great to hear you. The set list you've been doing lately is just so good and so well paced. And if you can, Lita, you know, because obviously this is your thing and it's your name on the ticket and on the marquee. But I got to give you props for the band with Marty and Patrick and Bobby. They're so good. I mean, I can tell you're really dialed in with this band. Can you talk a little bit about the people in your band right now and just give everybody who isn't aware of the people you're playing with, what they bring to the table?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just guzzling a bottle of water. Yeah. No, I would love to talk about these guys because they are really just rock stars in their own right. And the other day, Marty was saying, you know, hey, you guys, you know, I got to catch an early flight back home. There's a party going on for all bass players, like all the biggest bass players in the music industry. And I've been invited and I want to go to this party. And they've got tacos and all the bass players are going to be there. I'm like, Marty, you are the biggest, baddest bass player out of all of them. You are a rock star in your own right. And you know, a lot of times people say to me, you know, Lita, if you could have anybody in your band, if you could play with people who are dead rock stars like Jimi Hendrix, or of course, you know, who the hell wouldn't want to play with Jimi Hendrix? But I mean, just all these wonderful musicians who have passed along the decades. Who would you want to have in your band, Lita? And I always say, you know what? I've got those guys. I've got Bobby Rock on drums. I've got Marty O'Brien on bass guitar. And I've got Patrick Kennison on lead vocals and guitar. And these guys can't be replaced. They are just part of our family and part of our team. And they are the biggest, baddest musicians out there that I could ever possibly be so blessed and so lucky to be touring with.
Yeah, Martin. They're great and great people too. I know you could, I mean, and I talk to artists about this all the time. It's one thing to be a great musician, but when you got to tour and travel and slug it out there on the road with four, five, six other people, you want to make sure that you can get along with those people and they don't annoy you and they don't drive you crazy, because there's enough of that on the road that without it coming from inside your band. So having a friendly and working and loving relationship with the other people in your band is almost as important as them being competent players.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And one sparks the other. One fire sparks the other fire. We all spark each other. And it goes so deep as our crew that we have too. And we have a great crew. We have a great guitar technician and a great drum technician. And George Marshall out there running sound and making it all happen for the fans. It's just off the hook. And I'm so grateful to have these guys in my life. I count my blessings every day.
Well, I was really excited and happy to see this news come out. And George mentioned this to me the other day. And of course, we couldn't talk about it just yet until it went public. But look, I mean, it to me, it's criminal that you, the Runaways, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yet, is just ridiculous to me. However, maybe a good sign and a good step in that direction of it happening at some point is the fact that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is going to showcase one of your guitars, which is awesome. So, and you're going to perform at the showcasing of the guitar at the Hall of Fame in Cleveland. So give everybody the story on how this came about, what the guitar is that's going to be exhibited, and when it's all going down.
Well, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has been really good to us lately. And in the last year and a half since before COVID, you know, they're big Lita fans. They're big Runaways fans. And they want to do a display on Lita Ford guitars and memorabilia, updated photographs, and just put up a really cool display in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, in the heavy metal section of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I am so honored to be a part of it and just be a part of this. I mean, God, it's been so many decades, you know, since we've started playing music. And it's so awesome to have somebody acknowledge it and want to do a display on what you do as a female rock guitarist, you know, and just a rock guitarist in general and lead singer in general. It's huge. And so we've been doing interviews and photo shoots, and we want our fans to come out to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and be a part of this prestigious ceremony on July the 26th. At 2 p.m., middle of the day. I hate middle of the day, but it's middle of the day.
I'm like you, too. Nothing can be late enough for me. Anything before 1 or 2 is traumatic. So I hear you on that.
But, you know, it's really, I'm just so grateful.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
So
July 26th, 2 o'clock local time there in Cleveland, you're going to present this guitar. And you're going to play a few songs with Patrick, right?
Yeah, the guys, it's just me and Patrick. And it's just like, wow, sometimes Patrick and I, we play together and things just are magical. And, you know, and we had a couple of guys from Bret Michaels, a couple of guys from Firehouse. And it's just like, wow, you guys play together and it's so magical. Why don't you do that in your set? And we're just like, no, we save these things for special occasions. And so the Cleveland Rock Hall of Fame on July the 26th at 2 p.m. will be one of those occasions.
Now tell everybody about the guitar and the history of the guitar that you are going to be putting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Well, it's a duplicate of Maurice, and anyone who's a Lita fan knows where Maurice came from. Anyone who's a original BC Rich fan knows a lot about how they were created and who the builders were and how amazing these guitars are. They are just like living, breathing souls, these guitars that were created back in the 80s. And Maurice was one of the originals. He is one of the most powerful guitars I own on this planet. He is just off the freaking hook, this guitar. As a matter of fact, you know, Eddie, this is kind of a funny story, but back in the day, somebody stole Maurice from a gig, and I don't know how they got their hands on him, but they took my guitar and they took him home, and I was freaking out. Needless to say, when we got to the storage unit, everybody said, "Oh yeah, Lita, we unloaded all your gear, but Maurice, the guitar, is not here." I'm like, "What? You telling me somebody stole Maurice, my guitar? That's insane. Are they insane? They can't handle Maurice. Maurice is like a possessed spirit. They probably have this guitar under their bed, and it's haunting them every night, every day. They can't handle this guitar. They could never play it. They could never even plug it in and strum a few chords. It's just not like that. This guitar is like a wild beast." And so they stole this guitar, and I went on the radio and I said, "You need to return this guitar to the BC Rich factory, and no questions asked, because you know you can't play this guitar. You know this guitar is eating you up alive every day, every second of your life. You probably got it stuffed into a bed somewhere. It's just like, come on. It's one of a kind in the world. There's no other guitar like this." And, you know, like a month later, they brought it back to the factory. No questions asked. They just went in, dropped it off, and boom, there was Maurice. Maurice came back to me. And so this guitar is being duplicated and presented to the Hard Rock Hall of Fame. And they're going to do a display with Maurice. And I wouldn't be surprised if that display, like, has some spiritual freaking, what do you call it? Like, vibe to it when you walk past it.
Yeah. Yeah, you that's know? Awesome. So Maurice has traveled quite the road, and that road is ending up in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And that'll happen again, 2:00 on Monday, July 26th in Cleveland. It's open to the public. People can come and see you and Patrick do a set and see the guitar go into the Hall of Fame. And it sounds like it's going to be a great afternoon. So let me ask you this. Speaking of guitars, when I saw you play recently, and I've seen you play again quite a bit, you at times in the set play a Black Explorer, which more than one person said to me, "I think that's the guitar," meaning the guitar from the Runaways. Do you still tour, and is that still the Explorer you played in the Runaways? Is that the exact one that you play now?
Yeah, that's the same one from the Runaways. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I've always taken care of my shit. I've always taken good care of my guitars, and I've always taken good care of the older stuff. Unless somebody steals it and it disappeared. But the old Hamers, which I have serial numbers 0048 and 0012, which are the ones I used in the Runaways, is the one that I play live on stage for Cherry Bomb, for Out for Blood, and for Black Leather, which was written by the Sex Pistols for the Runaways. So, I mean, it's pretty badass. It's got a lot of scars, but it still sounds great.
Yeah, it does. What's the history of that guitar? I mean, you got it as a kid, I would imagine. Did you have an endorsement back then, or did you save up and buy it? What was the story with it?
No, I didn't have an endorsement. I just wanted something that was abstract and something that was out of the ordinary. A lot of people were playing Les Pauls, and a lot of people were playing Stratocasters and Telecasters, and all of which I own. I have a great Strat, a great Tele, but it just didn't feel right live, and I wanted something that was really original, I guess you could say, something that I could just put on and wear like an old pair of jeans that was just something that felt good and fit good. And you were just like, yeah, man, I own this. This is me. This is who I am. And that hammer at the time was one of those things that I just had to have it. And in the Runaways, I went out and bought that black hammer. But in the white one, the 0012, that one, I walked into Thoroughbred Music in Chicago. And was it Joel? Joel Hamer? Oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank. He just pulled it off the wall and said, Lita, you have 0048. You need 0012. And he pulled it off the wall and he handed it to me. And so I nicknamed those guitars Salt and Pepper because one's white, one's black. Mm. And they are just badass. I mean, they are as badass as any guitar, like, for instance, Leslie West had or played. You know, they just got that old school badassery thing going on with the pickups,
yeah,
wood. And so,
yeah, they,
you know,
they really do. It's so cool to see it. And it's so cool to hear it when you take it out on stage and play it. Do you, I mean, Lita, I would assume, and rock fans would assume and hope that you doing this and you, them extending this to you to come to the Hall of Fame, to put a guitar in there, to do a performance there, that it would hopefully lead to you and or the Runaways actually being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Is that your hope as well? Do you think that this is hopefully an olive branch and a step into that direction?
I hope so. I mean, you know, I'm just grateful for whatever it is they want to give me. I'm grateful. But to be inducted would be huge. And that's my ultimate goal, I got to say. And it's not about the guitar. It's not about the clothes. It's not about any of it other than who I am. And who I am in the music in the music industry. And, you know, the people that I have influenced in the music industry. And I think that deserves a spot in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no doubt. I couldn't agree more. One last thing as far as Runaways are concerned. You know, every time I've talked to you, you've kind of given me a state of the union on where things are at with you and the other women from that band and whether there's dialogue or not or meetings that have happened and didn't happen. Has there been any, what can you tell us now about your relationship with the other members of the band? Are you in touch with anybody? Is there been any progress on any fronts, any setbacks? How are things now? That doesn't sound so promising. That laugh does, sounds somewhat sinister.
I'm sorry. Yes, I am sinister. I mean, I have no drama in my life. I love my life. I love my band and my crew and my fans and everybody I work with. I have no drama in my life. And I want to keep it that way. But, I mean, you know, the Runaways are just all off in different corners of the earth. And I don't necessarily want to go in those corners. I'm real happy right here in my niche.
You know, okay, because so in the past, you felt, you know, it seemed like you were sort of more in a space where like you would entertain doing that again if it all came together. But it sounds like now you're saying you're pretty much moved on from it and not worried about it or thinking about it anymore. Am I right?
Well, you know what? I'm easy. I'm easy peasy lemon squeezy. That's just me. I'm an easy person. I'm easygoing, and if it should happen that way, then so be it. I'm there. No problem.
All right. Fair enough. And the last thing before I let you go is, you know, we talked about you having time off like everybody for the last year or so, year and a half, whatever it's been. During that time, have you and the band worked on new music? Would you like to make a new record? Is there any update on where that might be at?
Oh, yeah, man. We got the greatest new record. It's just so freaking off the hook. And so much has happened during the time of the making of this record. And it's just been so difficult trying to get it out and get it out the way we want it to come out. Because, I mean, it's a different world out there now. You know, I mean, it's a very visual world. And this record is too good just to give away to some random record label. We want it to have special treatment, and we want it to be treated like it deserves to be treated. It's very visual. They're really great songs. I think a lot of people will be able to just, just go, oh my God, this is what we've been waiting for. And I know there's a lot of fans out there, and I know how hungry they are for rock and roll, because trust me, I search through the internet every day looking for new stuff to listen to. And I find myself listening to stuff just going, no, why am I listening to this? You know, it lasts about 2 days in my house, and then I got to turn it off. But there's some really diehard rock fans out there that want to hear riffy, melodic, real, true rock and roll. And the hurdles we've had to jump to make this record have been insane. But we're not giving up, and we're pushing forward. And we have some really great people involved that are mixing the record and producing the record. And it's going to come out. It's just a matter of, getting over these hurdles. So we've had deaths and drug addiction. And it's just like, oh, my God, what else is going to happen? And I think all these things are adding up to make this record even more powerful. So it's coming. I think 2022.
Okay, so you're thinking next year.
Yeah. I mean, this year's almost over.
Yeah, that's true. We're already halfway through July. It's crazy. Is this the same record that you told me in recent times that you were doing some work with Gary Hoey on? With?
Yeah. Yeah,
so
it
this
is.
And, this has been around for a while, trying to sort through this, like you said.
Yeah, and you know, the thing with it, Eddie, it's really weird. It's almost like I had to live this record before I could write this record. And each song is real. Each song is like, man, I lived this. And I think a lot of people will say, yeah, man, I lived this too. I get it. We get it. And it's been just a lot of really weird things happened in the making, but it's a concept record. And then again, you know, it made it even more difficult rather than just writing a song and throwing it on the record. This whole record goes together. This is a concept record. And that concept is pretty hardcore. When you hear it, you're going to go, oh, whoa, okay. I think.
Do you have a title for it yet?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
Nothing you can say yet, though, right?
No, I wish I could. I'm dying. I'm just chomping at the bit.
All right. Well, I look forward to hearing it. The fans look forward to hearing it. It's so good to see you out there playing again and hearing you in the band very much at the top of your game. It's great to see and hear. Everybody go see Lita. If you're in the Cleveland area, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Monday, July 26th, 2 o'clock. See Maurice go into the Hall of Fame and see Lita and Patrick do a few songs there. And it should be a wonderful afternoon. It's very deserved. And I hope it's just a small step in you yourself being in there, which in my humble opinion, you should have been in already many, many years ago. Let's hope that that is what's on the way. Lita, thank you so much. It's always good to talk to you, and I know I'll be seeing you soon out there on the road.
Yeah, man. Thank you, Eddie. And you guys, please come down and see us in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and give us some support, and we'll see you then, July 26th, 2 p.m. Yeah, man. Let's do this.
Don't forget to bring Maurice.
No
make
way,
sure Maurice
man.
Make sure Maurice doesn't get lost or stolen on the way, Lita.
By the way, do you know who Maurice is?
No, I was actually thinking of that. What is the guitar named after? Who?
So do you remember the Bewitched television series?
Yes.
You remember her father was a warlock and his name was Maurice?
Is that right? Is that what it came from?
Yeah.
I remember Bewitched. I remember the woman that played her. I remember the husband was Darren. I think his name was Darren in the show.
Yeah, he was just a dork. Yeah.
I don't remember Maurice. Now I got it. When those shows come on, when those those retro TV channels come on, I'm going to have to watch a Bewitched episode and now try to pick that out.
All right, you guys pull out your old Bewitched movies. And Maurice was just a badass.
In the show and the guitar. I got it now.
God, okay. All right, Eddie, thank you so much for the interview. And, we love you always.
Love you, too. We'll see you soon.
We'll see you guys soon. All right, keep rocking.
See you, Lita. Bye-bye.
Bye, 26. Bye.
Thanks to Lita. Always great to visit with her. And congratulations to her guitar, Maurice, going into the hall. Hopefully she herself gets there long overdue. We'll be right back with interview number two on this week's podcast. It's with Steve Whiteman, the frontman of Kix. Next.
Hey there. I host a show called Therapy Gecko, where I dress up as a lizard and talk to anonymous strangers from the internet about their lives. They tell me their relationship problems.
I found out that I was related to the guy that I was dating.
Their hobbies.
I collect my roommate's toenails and fingernails.
Their secrets.
When we did not have toilet paper, I would use the shower curtain.
And also sometimes kind of serious stuff.
I have anxiety when I talk to people.
I'm also sometimes joined by celebrity guests like Doja Cat, Lil Yachty, Bobby Lee, and Eric Andre. Some of the more interesting calls we've gotten recently include a guy who argued with a demon living on his wall, a caller drunk at his job at a middle school, and a caller wondering whether or not he should transform into a dog. So if you're sick of your own life and you want to get lost in the life of a stranger, search for Therapy Gecko wherever you get your podcasts.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Save big money at Menards. Keep your lawn looking its best with Menards' premium four-part fertilizer program. Each step is tailor-made for the health of your lawn. Get started this spring with a bag of crabgrass preventer with lawn food. Apply just once early in the spring to feed your lawn for over 2 months. Pick it up in our garden center today and check out Menards.com for more hot deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back. Eddie Trunk here. And next up this week, we have Steve Whiteman, lead singer of the band Kix. Just released his first ever solo album called You're Welcome. It's out now. Here's Steve to tell us all about that and a whole lot more. So it's good to see you at M3. You guys always have a blast doing that. How was this year for you?
It's, you know, after not playing for almost 2 years and to get up in front of a crowd like that, it's just as exhilarating as can be to get up in front of our loyal 40-year-old fans and and kick their ass is just, it's an amazing feeling. And luckily, we got a couple tune-up shows in before we had to do M3. We did Dallas and Houston, Fort Worth, Dickinson, North Dakota. You ever heard of that one?
Yes, I was supposed to do that. Believe it or not, Steve, I was actually supposed to do that with you. I was supposed to host that.
Yeah.
And I couldn't because I was closing on this place in Vegas. My closing came up, and I had to cancel out of it. But they were nice enough to ask me to host that, and I was really bummed I couldn't do it. But it's an outdoor free thing, if I recall.
Yes, it's in the street, and it poured down rain about halfway through our set. The Kix cloud continues.
And I looked at it because I was ready to go there. It's a tough place to get to. It's not really near anything, if I recall.
You recall correctly. This airport was the smallest airport I've ever seen. And you take a little puddle jumper in there. But the people that put it on were incredible. They took great care of us. And our next show was in Denver. And Denver had weather from hell the next day. So we had a hell of a time getting out of there. But we made the show.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry that I missed it. And hopefully next year I'll be able to jump on one of those shows there. And yeah, I got to watch you at M3 and of course intro you. It's great. You guys have never not played an M3, right? You've done that since the beginning, if I recall.
Yeah, when it first started, it was one night and we were like third on the bill on Saturday night. And then the promoter came to us and said, "We want you guys to headline a night." And I'm like, "What? Well, why?" I didn't think we could pull it off, but the fans really latched onto it, and they showed up in droves and draw about 10, 12, 15,000 people to it. So we've earned our own headlining night. It's the only venue in the country that we'll headline at a festival, but that's ours.
Yeah, well, it's appropriate. I mean, that's your home turf, and it's appropriate, and it's a great way to kick off the festival. And I think the audience really appreciates it, and it's become a thing. And I think it's really cool that that's happened for you there. And it was great to be a part of it for me to be out there again this year as well. So let me ask you about Kix before we talk about your solo record. As far as live shows are concerned, I mean, fans have talked about and noticed that Ronnie is once again not playing with you. Can you give us an update on how he's doing and his status?
Sure. You know, Ronnie's been up and down over the past couple of years. He'll clean up for a while, then he'll come out and he'll do great. He'll play great. And then he'll slide off the wagon and he won't show up to shows. So this time our hands were just tied because we've been tolerating and Brian's just been taking over all guitar duties. But this time he was he's pretty much in a rehab for a year that he can't get out of. So he couldn't join us on stage if he wanted to or if he was capable of it. And at this point, you know, all we can do is wish him the best and let the fans know that the door will be open if and when Ronnie can get it together and get healthy mentally and physically. And our guy that's filling in for him, Bob Perry, totally understands that. And we're all rooting for Ronnie. But right now, in order for us to go out and put on the best show as possible, we had to bring in Bob Perry.
Mm. And Steve, you know, I'm wondering, without getting too personal on this, because I know it is a personal thing for Ronnie, and we all wish him nothing but the best, but, you know, COVID had a real bad effect and impact on a lot of people who struggle with addiction. We've seen examples of that. Do you think Ronnie falling off was triggered by that at all? Has he expressed that at all?
He hasn't expressed that. He's, like I say, he's been battling this up and down for about the last 8 years. When we did the Cool Kids album in 1982, 83, Ronnie had a drug problem then, and we had to replace him. So he got clean and sober and was sober for over 20 years, and we don't know what triggered his relapse, but he's been up and down for about the last 8 years.
Yeah, I mean, a year in rehab is a pretty strong commitment, so hopefully that'll do the trick.
Well, I think he ran into a problem with the law, and he pretty much has to do that in order to just to try to fulfill his recovery. So he's all in. I mean, I've talked to him a couple of times. Brian's talked to him a couple of times, and he wants to do whatever he has to do to get better and get back to where he belongs.
Steve, you've been in this business as a singer and frontman for well over 40 years now. Did you ever struggle with that kind of stuff in your life? I mean, did you have that early on? Did you dabble in that, or were you always on the clean and straight?
I would never say I was clean and straight. I definitely dabble with alcohol. That's probably my weakness. When I get done a show, I need a couple shots of Jack Daniels and a couple beers just to bring me back down to earth. But never had a drug problem. Never got into that. It never interested me. And it's just unhealthy. I've been pretty much a health nut ever since my 20s about working out and being in good shape and being able to hit that stage with the confidence that I know I can perform at a high level. So I've always made that my priority.
Yeah, I mean, sure, having a few drinks, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I've been lucky in that regard, too. I mean, I've been in this business 38 years professionally, and thank God I never did a drug or had an issue with that at all. But yeah, I'll pick my spots and have some drinks. But and I'm talking about, you know, we've seen it. We've all seen it for so many decades with so many bands and so many people, the casualties of rock and roll and the excesses that come with it. It's lucky, you know, you're lucky and blessed if you're able to come out the other side of it still okay and not having gone down those roads.
Right. Brian struggled with it at one point too. When he left Kix in like 1991, he went out to LA and he got into drugs and had a really bad stretch, and he's been clean now for over 20 years. So, you know, it's unfortunately when you get into these bands and your favorite people are like Keith Richards and you, and these people influence you and you want to be like them. So you start doing drugs to be like them and live the life. And I never wanted to live that life.
Yeah. Well, Keith is an anomaly. Nobody can figure out. Keith will be, we'll all be gone and Keith will still be here.
But young guys get in bands and, you know, they want to tear up hotel rooms and they want to do all the legendary things that the rock band did when they were kids. So, I think some people latch on to the drugs the same way they do just recreation and just being nuts. It's just part of being in a band. It's the freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you talk about your health regimen and how long ago you started it. And I remember probably about 10 years ago talking to you, or maybe it was when the last Kix record came out and we talked about it a little bit. At that time you were doing, was it P90X that you were doing? You were telling me about your regimen. You were real. I mean, anybody that's seen you knows that you're obviously in top shape. Given your age, it's remarkable the shape you're in as well. Not to say you're old, Steve, but you know what I'm saying.
Oh, I'm old, Eddie.
But do you still do that? Talk about how you stay in shape like that. It's incredible.
Absolutely. Like it takes a lot of discipline, and especially through this pandemic. I mean, for me, to be able to get up, and I walk 4 to 5 miles every day just to start my day, and then I work out, and I've been doing P90X for, I don't know, about 12, 15 years now, and it works, and I've been doing it so long, I don't even need the disc anymore. I know all the exercises in my head, and I do it so I can put on good shows. That's my whole thought behind it. If and when I stop doing this, I don't think I'm going to be working out like an animal every day, but for now, as long as I'm doing this, I'm dedicated.
I've heard of it and I've seen the commercials. It's basically a home exercise program where you go through what you see on the TV.
Yeah. I mean, this is the old one. There's been several new ones released after this one, but, this one, I just liked it so much and it works. It's rigorous and I've always worked out, but I wasn't doing it right. So the P90X shows you how to start with your abs one day, do your arms one day, do cardio one day, do legs and back, do pull-ups, and you do different stuff every day. So you're targeting all the body in a week's time. Then you just do it again the next week.
Now, for you, of course, being a front man and being so active on stage, you've got to physically be in shape, but obviously you got to vocally be in shape too. And that's a whole different muscle that you got to worry about and work. Talk a little bit about how you've kept your voice in such shape because, you know, a lot of singers as they age aren't able to do that. What's been your secret?
Discipline, training and teaching for 25 years. You know, I've always known how to protect my voice and the ridiculous warm-ups that I do that people laugh at because it takes me an hour to get stretched out and work my voice up to the point where I'm confident when I hit that stage, it's going to work the way I want it to work. I forgot your question.
Well, yeah, just what your regimen is vocally like that, because I've seen you do those warm-ups. I've seen you.
Yeah.
It's,
yes,
you know,
have.
You do, You're dancing around, you're singing and screaming into a towel, you're doing all that stuff. But people find what works for them. You know, I'm always amazed at that too, Steve, because in all my years of interviewing people, I'll talk to singers and they'll tell me, like Dio was like this, where he would just walk out on stage and do no warm up and no warm down. And then there's people like you that have a whole pre and post regimen. I guess everybody finds what works for them, right?
Yeah. You know, and part of that is just nerves. I never hit the stage without being a bundle of nerves. I'm always thinking this has got to be a great show. It's got to be a great show. So preoccupying myself, doing all the pacing and the push-ups and the stretching and the screaming into the towel, that occupies my mind right up to the point where I hit the stage and I just, you know, then I'm out there. So that's kind of, it really doesn't take me an hour to get prepared, but I give myself an hour to get prepared. And I had another train of thought. I keep losing my train. I've been doing these interviews all day today and my phone's been crappy. So I apologize for the, with a crappy.
No, you're good now. You're good now. Do you, Steve, do you do anything? And I found this interesting. Geddy Lee told me this once because I spoke to him on the last, when they were doing their last tour and, mm-hmm. you know, Geddy sings all that high stuff in Rush. And in the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years prior, he struggled with some of that, understandably. And on the last tour, I thought he was singing better than he ever did. And I remember going backstage and talking to him in the dressing room. And I said, Ged, you're singing better than I remember in 15, 20 years. And I remember what he said to me, and it really was surprising. He said, yeah, I made a change. I said, well, what'd you do? He said, my diet. He told me, I think at the time he had cut out all dairy or something, and it had a positive impact on his voice. I had never heard of anything like that, but being a guy that gives vocal lessons and, again, you know, you take care of yourself. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Yeah, you are what you eat. I mean, there's a lot of food that I avoid before shows and even dates before shows because it does affect your vocal cords. So, yeah, I'm aware of all that stuff. And, you know, people like you were talking about Dio, who just hop up on stage and sing great, they always piss me off because it's like I got to go through this tremendous warm-up. And Robin Zander is another one of those guys that just, I don't know if he does anything, any kind of a warm-up, but he just pops up and he sings great. I'm amazed at that people can do that.
Yeah, I'm amazed at the people we all know. I mean, there's singers that, you know, the Glenn Hugheses and the Steven Tylers and the Sammy Hagars and Robin Zanders and people like yourself who, as they age, can still do it. And then others just can't. And, I guess it's just comes down to, at that point, how you took care of yourself or just your DNA, how, you know, if you're able to, just like an athlete, I would think some athletes can hang in there longer than others before it unravels. But I do think that probably comes down to a lot of mental stuff, I would think, as well. And as a vocal instructor, you could attest to that, I would think.
Absolutely. And like I say, it takes a lot of dedication. You have to really care about your instrument because that is your instrument and you have to take care of it. So if you realize you're doing some damage and in certain ways, you got to cut that stuff out. So that you learn through living. And over the years, I've learned to hang on to what I have so far. I mean, I can't say that I'm singing as good as I did in my 20s and 30s, but I can still pull it off. And we actually just started to tune down another half a step because there were some songs that I was struggling on. And I'm like, I don't want to drop these songs. I just want to drop the key. So, and everybody agreed. So that made a huge difference. That helped.
Are you still doing vocal lessons for people? Are you still an instructor?
You know, when COVID hit and the school that I was teaching at shut down, it was down for several months. And just contemplating going back to do that after getting that break, I thought, you know, after 25 years of doing this, I think I'm going to put it down because we were doing fly dates, like 3 and 4 dates on the road and coming home and teaching 2 days. And I'm like, I don't really need to do this anymore. So I've stopped.
Mm-hmm. You're one of your most famous students who is very vocal about how helpful you were to her and how much she loves you is Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm. How old was she when you were instructing her how to sing?
She was probably 16, 17, something like that. And she was already great. She just didn't have the power that she needed to project her voice. And, I showed her how to get that focus into her voice and gave her other singers to emulate, like Ann Wilson. I mean, that's to me, that was the perfect comparison for her to study how she sings. And that's what I did as a kid. I studied other singers and I would emulate them. So she's my prize student, obviously. And she would have been great regardless of had I taught her or not.
When you started working with her as a teenager, did you recognize that in her? Did you see in her what she's become?
Oh yeah, yeah. I could see it blossom before my eyes. And she worked with me for maybe a little over a year, and it was sporadic. It wasn't an every week thing. It was whenever they could get her out there to me. And yeah, I saw it right away. And as she improved, all this power started coming into her voice, and they were already being courted by Atlantic Records at that point. So I try to steer them away from that.
You got some history there, yeah.
We didn't do so well at Atlantic.
Yeah. Steve, you said the singers you emulated, who were they? Who were the people that you listened to that shaped your vocal approach that you loved?
I loved Alice Cooper. I loved Mark Farner. I loved Robin Zander. I love the Beatles. I go for melody and harmony. That's always my go-to. So those early bands, Deep Purple, and then it got into AC/DC and Aerosmith and all the bands that Kix tried to emulate. But in the beginning, it was all those 60s and 70s bands that I sang along with. Three Dog Night, Queen, all those bands taught me how to sing.
You know, mentioning Alice is interesting because Alice is obviously an icon and a great guy and still great to this day. But he's not a guy that comes up a lot when you talk about great singers. But if you really listen to the records and you listen to him now, he's so consistent and his voice really is great. It's not, you know, it's not a Freddie Mercury kind of voice, which is why I don't think he gets mentioned in that breath. But his voice is very cool, very unique, and it still sounds exactly the same. He's just not a guy. When people talk about Alice, it's the theatrics, it's the songs. But you don't hear a lot of people, at least I don't, talk about his vocal ability. So I think it's really interesting that you mention that because he's really somebody I think that's overlooked in that area.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Just singing Alice Cooper songs taught me how to get that growl into my voice. And then I could sing Mark Farner where it was clean. I could sing Steven Tyler where it's kind of in between, half growly, half clean. So I would emulate all these great singers as best I could. So when we started making records, when Donnie Purnell would say, give a little Steven Tyler, or give a little Bon Scott, I would be able to find those references and do it. So I think that's what most people do. You latch on to your favorite singers and you do your best to emulate them. And then you claim it as your own.
Let's talk about, you joke about you're being old. Well, you've decided to make a solo record, your first solo record after nearly 40 years in this business. The record came out last week. It's called You're Welcome. I imagine, I'm going to take a stab at this and say that this may be a byproduct of the pandemic where you're sitting around and said, you know what, after 40 years, damn it, it's time to do a solo record.
No, I definitely had no intention of doing a solo record. And you know, if you think about it, I did solo records under the band name Funny Money. So you know, this isn't really, this is my first solo record under my name, but I did do four other records and Funny Money that I wrote most of the material up until the Stick It album. But this whole thing just kind of happened through Jimmy Chalfant, our drummer, and Brad Divin, who was actually in Kix during the Cool Kids album. Brad's been building a studio in his house. So him and Jimmy had been getting together and they were recording cover songs just to give Brad some experience in his studio. And Jimmy just said to him one day, you know, Steve's sitting on a pile of songs and I don't know if Kix is going to be doing anything with them anytime soon. So why don't we get him in here and record a couple of originals and record something from the ground up. And Brad said, that sounds great. So I took my 12 songs that are on the record and I was sat down with Brad and played all of them. He just looked at me and said, let's record them all. I said, well, then I'm making a solo record, aren't I? And he said, I think so. So that was the whole, that's the way it got kicked off. And I was lucky enough to have Jimmy Chalfant do most of the drumming. I got to play a couple of tracks of drums on there. I had Bob Perry come in and do most of the the rhythms, and I got to play a bunch of rhythms on it as well. I made it a point on a couple songs that I got to play everything. So just to let people know that I'm more than just a singer.
Yeah, well, that was interesting to me. I did not realize that. I didn't know that you played drums and you played all instruments like that. I mean, and I've learned that over time with certain musicians, which is kind of surprising, where they'll be like, oh, I'm really a guitar player, but it just, you know, the voice, and they wanted a front man, and that's why I did it. But you can pretty much play everything, huh?
Pretty much. I mean, I started out as a drummer. When I joined what is now Kix, I started as a drummer slash front man with another drummer. Him and I would kind of switch back and forth, which was great for giving me experience to learn how to front a band, because I was an absolute turd in the beginning. So that worked out well. And then when they threw me out front permanently, you know, we got Jimmy in, and Jimmy's such a great drummer. He's just a pile of thunder, it sounds to me. And the other thing about this record is Jimmy did 10 drum tracks from his house and sent the files into Brad. I did all the vocals from my house. And Bob and Brad probably spent the most time together in the studio, because Bob came in with an idea of every song he would play on. He knew exactly what guitar would work best, what amp would work best. He's just one of those kind of real meticulous guys. And I would have just done a plug-in and said, to hell with it. But I thank God he didn't do that, because he really took this record to another level. All the guys did. Dean Kramer came in and played some solo stuff, and having Jimmy and Brad playing bass tracks, and he did an incredible job.
Yeah, Jimmy is a tremendous drummer and also has a tremendous fashion sense. His outfit at M3 was just fantastic.
I like his suits.
Yes, he's rocking. You know, most drummers are the least dressed in the band, usually tank top and shorts or something, because they got to be so active. But Jimmy rocks the jacket and the color coordinated. He's really stepped that up in recent years.
He has, and I don't know where it came from, but we all love it, because he used, like you said, he was just a jeans and t-shirt guy, Zildjian shirt or whatever, and get up there and play your ass off. But one day he come in with this suit, and we all go, that's pretty damn cool, Jimmy. So now he's got a closet full of them.
Steve, so why this versus a Kix record? Did you talk to the guys about possibly doing another Kix record, and was it there not a lot of interest there from them? Why take these songs and do it like this versus a band thing?
I did share this music with the guys, and I got crickets back. It's like, I don't know, they just weren't ready to do a Kix album, or they just didn't feel this material qualified as Kix material. Because when I write, I'm not writing for any one project or vehicle. I just write songs. And my hope was to just take these songs in a pile, throw them into the hat whenever Kix was ready, and whatever they pick out, great. And what they don't pick out, then maybe I'll release it by myself down the road. So, but there's just no talk of a Kix album right now. I think we got so backed up by the pandemic, and we didn't get a chance to really get out and promote the Midnight Dynamite Relit. So that's still a campaign that Mark is trying to push right now. And I haven't heard any new music from the other guys. So at this point, I don't know if it's a business end thing, a financial thing, or it really doesn't get talked about that much.
Mm. That being said, anybody that having heard the record, and it's a really good record, it's a fun record, there's some great songs on it, it's not, there's no 3-minute songs, I mean, hooky, quick, I mean, there's nothing on this record that a Kix fan would not connect with and relate to. It's your voice, it's very Kix sounding, even though it's not under the Kix name. At least that's how I felt about it.
Well, that's a compliment, and I think because of my influences are different. Kix always ran down that line of Aerosmith, Zeppelin, AC/DC, Stones, and like I was telling you earlier, my influences are a lot different than that. And I write like that. I use my influences when I write. I don't just try to write in one direction. So if that's the reason that they didn't feel that these songs were worthy of a Kix album, I'm okay with that.
You know, you've told me many times that you're a listener of the podcast interviews that I post from this radio show. And as a result, you know, what's that?
Every week. I don't miss one.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I was going to tell you, so from that, you obviously know that I love CDs and I love physical packaging. So I thought it was funny when I saw you at M3 last week and you handed me the CD, you gave a precursor and you're like, I'm just warning you, I did it on a small budget. I didn't have a lot of packaging and stuff. So talk about the packaging, because again, I just love having it physically no matter what. And I appreciate people still making CDs, but you got some nice photos here. But what I'm interested in asking you about is the cover, which is it looks like it's, you hand wrote it or something on a napkin. Talk about the cover.
I was on the phone with Madeline Scarpola, who helped me put this whole thing together. And we were going back and forth. She said, well, what kind of album cover are you thinking? What kind of artwork? I got this guy, you can talk to him. And I was like, I don't think any of the titles really deserve any kind of a cover. So I said, I've only got one idea. And I said, let me send you a picture. So I hung up and I drew the album cover just the way it is and sent it to her. And she said, I love it. So there was the album cover.
I got to tell you, I mean, you're a fantastic singer and frontman. As far as drawing stick figures, though, maybe not your strongest suit.
No. That would be my one and only album cover credit in my life.
But I got to tell you this, too. If I was a musician and I drew an album cover, Steve, it would probably look exactly like that stick figure, because I'm as bad, if not worse, in terms of writing and drawing. So but it's charming. It kind of works. I like it. I really do.
It does work. And, you know, it started back in the days when we used to do in stores and people would come up and say, can you write something special to me or do something special? And after a while, you just go brain dead. So I started drawing that little stick man. I thought, I'll give you a self-portrait. And then it just sort of evolved from there. People would get my autograph and go, I want the stick man too. So I've been doing that stick man since 81.
Yeah, once you paint yourself into a corner like that, signing autographs, then it becomes a thing. You know, I'm very close with Ace Frehley for many decades, and Ace, years ago, started for people he do a little something extra for. He would draw an Ace card after his signature. And now, because people have seen that when he's done meet and greets, I want the card. I want the card too. You got to be careful because you set a precedent.
Yeah, and the title came from, I was, again, not sure what to call it. And I was sitting over with all the guys when we finished up recording, and I said, anybody have any ideas for what we could call this thing? And about 2 or 3 hours later, Bob Perry texted me, and he said, you're welcome. And I thought, that's perfect. I mean, got the stick man, it's all the things that people identify with me. So I thought, you know, it's simple, it says it all, and I like it.
Yeah, and if you've seen Kix Live, you know the reference to "You're welcome" when you make the audience say that. So, it ties it all together. Do you hope to do shows, Steve? Would you like to put a band together and try to play live, or do you just feel that doing that with Kix is good enough for now?
We've talked about it. I think if we're able to do it at all, it would probably be around the January, February time, because Brian is getting back in with Rhino Bucket, and they always do a European tour every January and February. So that would be a window for us. If Brad's not out on the road with Enrique Iglesias, we could probably do something there if they all wanted to. So there's a possibility.
All right. And as far as Kix going forward, we hope Ronnie gets back and gets well, but you're going to continue to, man, I'll tell you, I remember, I don't know how many years it is now, but your booking agent, Sullivan, calling me up and saying, I did it. I'm like, what are you talking about? I got them back together. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, Kix, they're coming back. I said, what? Because, you know, you had been on with me for Funny Money and we had talked over the years. And that seems like yesterday. But how long ago was that the band started up again?
Sullivan got on board with us around 2007, 2008, because we've just been doing like regional shows, like in our DC, Baltimore backyard area, just to do maybe 5-6 shows a year. That's the way it sort of started off. And just out of the blue, I got this call from Sullivan Big and had me on the phone for hours trying to convince me that he could be our agent. He could get us out there and rekindle what we lost. And I thought he was out of his mind. I told him, I said, there's no way in hell nobody gives a shit about us anymore. And he proved me wrong. The first gig he got us was Rocklahoma. And we went out in front of like 20,000 people, and it opened my eyes. And all of us were like, we were just shocked that that many people remembered us and enjoyed our show. And he's been our man ever since.
So that's 13, 14 years now that this is, that Kix has really been back going again. And I do remember at that time him also telling me, we're only going to do a few shows a year. It's not going to be a big thing. Well, you're out almost every weekend. So clearly it's doing well. And future for Kix, just the same thing. Just keep working the road and having fun and playing gigs when they come up.
That's the plan. As long as people want us and we're still able to put on good shows, because that's incredibly important to us. If we get to the point where we can't do it like we used to, then we stop.
Yeah, well, that's important too, as to me as a fan. I feel that way very strongly. Like, I'd rather have my last memory. Like I mentioned Rush before, my last memory of them was so good. You want to see a band ending or knowing when they've stayed too late at the party, quite frankly. And as a fan, as much as it's difficult to see a band end, I'd rather see that and have my last memory be great than have it be like, oh man, they were a shell of themselves. It wasn't great. It wasn't real. It wasn't good. I have so much respect for bands knowing when to say when, but given the performance I saw last week, I still think you got some tread left on the tire there, bud.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. And I agree with you 100%. It makes me sad when I see artists that were once great up there just going through the motions and just collecting a check. And there are some out there that are doing that, but I guess they feel they have to, because that's all they know. That's their only money maker.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve, people can get the record for people who want it physically, like the CD with the killer album cover. for people who want to get the CD, is it in stores? Are they going to your website? How do people get the music that want it physically?
You can go to the company that does all the Kix merch, and they do merch for a bunch of bands. It's called Right Rock, RIGHTROCK, rightrocksportswear.com. And just go to Kix or Steve Whiteman, and they'll have it there. And it did so well the first week that it was out. They sold out. I sent them 500 copies, and they sold out in like 3 days. So if you order it now, it's on a little bit of a back order because I just reordered some more CDs. So it's going to be available again real soon. So that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, for sure. I'm personally not on the vinyl kick, but there are a lot of people that are. Are you going to do it on vinyl as well?
Yeah, I've got a friend who runs a vinyl shop who wants to do it, and I give him the green light. I don't have to do a damn thing. So he's all in on that. I don't really understand it. I'm not the vinyl guy either. I never was. I was a cassette guy. Never liked turning that turntable and flipping that record. I like things to just run. And
right.
And you know what's funny is people that swear by the vinyl sound. Well, everything's recorded digitally these days. So that record isn't going to make it sound warmer because it's on vinyl. It's recorded digitally, so it's still digital. But I guess they find fun in it.
Yeah, look, I think having some physical connection with music is good. Again, I'm not on the vinyl kick. I agree with you on a lot of those things. But for people who are and people who just take the time to buy any music physically, I think it's great. And I'm assuming for people who just want to stream it, are you on all the streaming services with it as well?
Yeah, iTunes, Amazon, all that. And for people who want to get the vinyl, it's called The Head in Hagerstown, Maryland. Those things are on back order too. Apparently, a lot of people are getting vinyl made these days, so there's a waiting list. But he's going to have them ready, and I'm sure we'll be able to get the word out when they're ready to come out.
Well, listen, man, it's always great. It was great to see you last week, and absolutely great to talk to you. And I wish you nothing but the best with the solo record and the coming shows with Kix. And, you know, we'll be seeing each other out there on the road. We always do at various events and concerts. And congrats on the record, man. It's really a great record. I think anybody listening that's a Kix fan, you will enjoy this album. Should absolutely go out and pick it up. Thanks so much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Eddie. You're the best.
Well, great to visit with Steve Whiteman. Appreciate him being on, and I know he's a regular listener of the podcast, so thank you, Steve, and appreciate you and your new album, You're Welcome, which is out there right now. Thanks earlier to Lita Ford for joining me as well. Again, Eddie Trunk, or at Eddie Trunk on Twitter and Instagram. Be sure to follow. Listen every day on SiriusXM Volume. If you're in Fort Wayne, Indiana, come see me this Saturday with Warrant and Eric Martin. And yeah, keep an eye on the homepage of my website. All my appearances, as they are confirmed, are slotted in there. Hope everybody has a fantastic week. I'll catch you on the radio. If not, back here next Thursday for another all-new episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, produced, as always, by Joel Pollack. Have a great one, folks. Catch you then.
Hey there. I host a show called Therapy Gecko, where I dress up as a lizard and talk to anonymous strangers from the internet about their lives. They tell me their relationship problems.
I found out that I was related to the guy that I was dating.
Their hobbies.
I collect my roommate's toenails and fingernails.
Their secrets.
When we did not have toilet paper, I would use the shower curtain.
And also sometimes kind of serious stuff.
I have anxiety when I talk to people.
I'm also sometimes joined by celebrity guests like Doja Cat, Lil Yachty, Bobby Lee, and Eric Andre. Some of the more interesting calls we've gotten recently include a guy who argued with a demon living on his wall, a caller drunk at his job at a middle school, and a caller wondering whether or not he should transform into a dog. So if you're sick of your own life and you want to get lost in the life of a stranger, search for Therapy Gecko wherever you get your podcasts.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.